Who won the 1957 National Decathlon Championship?
Are all professional golfers eligible for the PGA tournament?
Who led the Chicago White Sox in batting for the 1957 season?
These and other questions will be answered on this session of the Sports Answer Man. Hi there, sports fans around the world. Welcome to the 354th session of the Sports Answer Man. Your Sports Answer Man's the director of sports for AFRTS in Los Angeles, Dick Shad. And I'm your host, Dwayne Jones. Many corners of the globe, if the globe has corners, have been heard from, Dick. And we'll dig into the mailbag here and come up with as many answers as time allows. And our first question from a listener in the land down under, Australia. Our Australian friend would like to know, what college do Murray Rose and John Hendricks attend?
Well, the two young Olympic champions from Australia are attending the University of Southern California, located right here in the city of Los Angeles. And we may add, as freshmen, they're doing quite well for themselves. Murray Rose and John Hendricks and two of their teammates won the 1958 Indoor National AAU Swimming Championships team title. Murray Rose was the big gun of the foursome, winning the 220-yard freestyle, the 440-yard freestyle, and the 1,500 meters. John Hendricks was second to Rose in the 220 and in the 440, and he was third in the 100 yards. And both boys were members of the relay teams, and they swam the last two legs of the 400 meters relay team that set a new meet record. The team championship was won on the final relay event of the meet. The Southern California freshman needed points in this event to win the meet. Murray Rose swam the backstroke leg of the 400-meter medley relay, and the team finished the relay in fourth spot with enough points to win the National AAU.
Sounds like a pretty busy boy, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, let's move out of the swimming pool and dry ourselves off and go over to the track and field section here. Army Specialist James Piper would like to know, who won the 1957 National Decathlon Championship?
Well, Charlie Pratt, the former Manhattan College star and now a member of the United States Army, won the National Decathlon title in 1957. Charlie Pratt won three of the 10 events, the 100 meters, the 400 meters, and of course his favorite event, the high hurdles. In the other seven events, Pratt was well up among the leaders, and he amassed a total point score of 7,164 to win.
Well, here's our next subject, and it's golf. Seaman Frank Walls would like to know if all professional golfers are eligible to play in the Professional Golfers Association Championships.
No, they're not. The PGA Championship is restricted to PGA members only. Now, these are men that have been in professional golf for 5 years or more and have been selected as members in good standing of the PGA. But a major change in the rules now makes it possible for five approved tournament players among the 25 leading money winners from January 1st to the playing of the National Open to be selected for the PGA Championship. The PGA Executive Committee has been authorized to invite these five players to compete in the tournament.
Well, then, does this mean that all members of the PGA are eligible to play in the championship tournament?
Well, they are eligible to play, but this doesn't mean that they're automatically in the tournament. They first must qualify. There are 32 sectional trials, and the winners of each win a spot in the PGA tourney. And for players that are unable to play in their sectional tournaments, there is a tournament held before the PGA to allow them to qualify. And then, of course, there are players that need not qualify. They're seeded into the tournament. This list is headed by the defending champion from the year before and all previous PGA champions, all members of the United States Ryder Cup team, the eight quarter finalists in the preceding year, the resident professional where the tournament is being held, the PGA seniors champion, and the United States Open champion if he's a member of the PGA. And last but not least, all PGA members in good standing who are among the 25 leading PGA official money winners in tournaments co-sponsored or approved by the PGA from January 1st through the U.S. Golf Association Open Championships.
Seems like all those who get in free are just about going to be all the golfers. But you know, this seems to be a real change in the format of the classic PGA tournament. Are these the only changes that they made?
No, it isn't, Duane. In fact, the biggest change of all is in the method in which the tournament will be conducted from now on. Since the inception of this tournament in 1916, it's been contested on the match play format, pitting one player against another to win the most holes out of 18. But beginning with this year, the 1958 tournament, the format will be 72 holes of medal play. The winner will be the player with the least number of strokes at the end of 72 holes.
Well, I like that way of settling it myself better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
As if it mattered. Marine Sergeant Bill Redlands sort of combines golf and bowling as our next subject. The sergeant would like to know which is harder to score, a hole-in-one in golf or a 300 game in bowling.
Well, that question, that's sort of like what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Well, the two aren't comparable because one is a one-shot phenomenon and the other requires 12 successive shots. However, it is of interest to note that Golf Digest recorded 3,187 holes in one for 1957.
My goodness.
Of which 2,949 were by men, and surprisingly enough, 238 of them were by women. Well, for the 1956-57 bowling season, the American Bowling Congress High Score Committee approved 302 perfect games bowled in ABC-sanctioned leagues and tournament competition. So you can see by these figures that holes in one will appear more often than a 300 game in bowling.
Well, I guess so. We're still on the bowling alley, and watch that guy, he's going to loft one. Airman Dick Irwin states that he has a bet with a buddy about the weight of the bowling pins used in the match in which the Budweiser team of St. Louis set their new all-time three-game scoring record. Now, the airman gave no figures, but how about you? Are you able to do so?
Yeah, well, thanks to the American Bowling Congress newsletter, we are able to supply the airmen with these facts and figures. When the Budweiser team rolled their all-time high three-game series of 3,858 pins, that was on March 12th of this year, it was against pins weighing between 3 pounds and 3 pounds 3 ounces. The pins averaged slightly more than 3 pounds 1 ounce, and they have been used in 210 previous games.
Well, this next question is also on bowling, but it sounds like a trick one to me. Airman Bill Eggers claims it's possible to throw more than 12 strikes in a game and still not bowl 300. Now, how about this? Is this true or not?
No, it isn't true, but as you said, it does sound like a trick question. Well, it would have to be, of course. It is possible for a person to actually throw 20 strikes in one game and not bowl 300.
Oh, come on now. Explain that.
Well, here's what would have to take place. On the first ball of each frame, the bowler would foul and his strike would not count. Well, then on the second ball of each frame, he would clear the boards with a second strike. Now, this, of course, in legal play would give him a string of spares and not strikes.
Mm-hmm.
But to cite an actual case, on March 27th of 1958 in Hartford, Wisconsin, 22-year-old Irvin Kep threw 13 strikes in one game, and he ended up with a total of 269. Here's what happened there. Kep opened up with five straight strikes, and on the first ball of the sixth frame, he fouled, threw a perfect strike, but he fouled on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then on his second ball, another strike, which gave him actually a spare for the sixth frame. He then continued to burn up the alleys with strikes the rest of the way out. So there you have it, 13 strikes, and he still did not have that perfect 300 game. Now, this should encourage all you beginning bowlers, I guess. Irvin Kep is in his first year of bowling. He only has a 143 average, so...
Well, that's not too bad for a first-year guy, is it?
No, it's a good average, but to throw a 300 game, it shows you there's a chance for everybody, I guess.
Well, I think I'd quit if I'd throw 13 strikes and end up with a 269. Say, our next letter here, Dick, comes from a Chicago White Sox fan, Master Sergeant Ted Duncan. The good sergeant would like to know who led the White Sox in batting during the 1957 season.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm glad to hear that there is another Chicago White Sox fan someplace.
Right? I don't know, though, now. It says he's a White Sox fan and he doesn't know who led the Sox in hitting?
Well, maybe you'd like to answer the question.
No, go ahead. I probably would say the wrong one.
Well, in 155 games, little Nellie Fox with a 317 average was the top man on the Chicago White Sox team.
Say, why do they keep calling him Little Nelly Fox? Man, he hits fine and he feels with the best.
Well, you couldn't very well call him the tall man. You see, Little Nelly stands 5'8" and he weighs in at about 150 pounds.
Well, it's pretty obvious. It's sort of like calling him Big Steve Bilko, I guess, or Big Don Drysdale, 6'20" or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if I may add about Nelly Fox, every pound a ball player, too. Marine Sergeant Jack Burns seeks a bit of information on boxing. Well, we're getting around in sports today. The sergeant would like to know how many heavyweight champions of the world, speaking of the size of men, were less than 6 feet tall, and what was their weight?
Well, there were three that I can think of right offhand, starting with Bob Fitzsimmons, who was 5'10.5" and weighed in at around 172 pounds. Next, and the shortest man to win the coveted heavyweight crown, was Tommy Burns. He was only 5'7", and he weighed 179 pounds. And the last man to measure under the 6 foot mark is, of course, the famous Rocky Marciano. He was 5'11", tipped the scales at 184 pounds. Three other champions measured right at the 6 foot mark, Ezzard Charles, Jersey Joe Walcott, and the current heavyweight champion of the world, Floyd Patterson.
There's still another question here on boxing. What's the record for knockdowns in a single fight?
Well, this happened way back on December 26, 1902, in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Battling Nelson was fighting Christy Williams, and the bout lasted 17 rounds. And in this time, Battling Nelson knocked Williams down 42 times.
Wow.
Williams, in turn, was able to floor Nelson only once. So that made a grand total of 43 knockdowns in the fight.
I should think that'd be enough of a record for anyone. Here's one. Army Specialist Joe Brown would like you to dig into the record books and find out for him the results of Joe Lewis's first professional fight.
Well, 1934 was the year, July 4th the date. Joe Lewis started his ring career by scoring a one-round knockout over Jack Kraken in the city of Chicago. And as an added bit of information on the Brown Bomber, in his 60 professional fights, Joe Lewis scored 10 KOs in the first round. Five of these were actually in championship fights.
You said that five of them were in championship fights, now, Dick. Just what was the total lapse of time for those five fights? Do you have that information?
Well, you're forcing me now to get out my pencil and paper, but just a second here, let's see now. Max Schmeling, 2 minutes and 4 seconds, and then John Henry Lewis, 2:29, Joe Roper, 2:20, Buddy Bear, 2:56, and Tammy Moriello, 209, that's 11 minutes and 58 seconds for five fights. Of course, it's of interest to note that Schmeling, Lewis, and Roper were knocked out in successive championship fights. What are you doing there, Duane?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how much Joe Lewis made per minute in those five fights, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to come up with the answer or not.
Well, I'll tell you what. While you're figuring out the answer there, I'll put in a mail plug.
Okay.
Remember now, fans, if you have sports problems that have you stumped, be sure to write to us here. Write to the Sports Answer Man, Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, Los Angeles, 38, California. We'll do the best we can to answer.
Well, right. I got the figures here. It all totals out to, more than $41,000 a minute. It's a shame he had to quit fighting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, time's caught up with us again. You've been listening to the Sports Answer Man with Dick Shad and Duane Jones. The Sports Answer Man has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.